This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on May 10th, 2012. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
The next item on the agenda is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Legacy Committee Political Action Committee, A09-22. We have Mr. Hintermister, Mr. Bonowitz, and Ms. Nerthen at the table. Please proceed whenever you're ready.
Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Legacy Committee Political Action Committee, which recommends you approve two findings as presented in the draft final audit report. The two findings presented were misstatement of financial activity and failure to file notices and properly disclose independent expenditures. For the first finding, misstatement of financial activity, the committee amended its reports to materially correct the misstatements as recommended in the interim audit report. For the second finding, failure to file notices and properly disclose independent expenditures, the committee's response to the interim audit report provided information regarding its position that the purpose of its direct mail letters was fundraising and did not require reporting as independent expenditures. The committee's response to the draft final audit report did not provide any additional comments with respect to this issue. We're prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Should we see what Professor Zolt thinks? Not yet. Commissioner McGann?
Thanks. Finding two regarding independent expenditures. Make sure I understand how we ended up where we ended up. The Legacy Committee, they're a PAC, right? Okay, thanks.
Correct.
That's what I thought. Okay, so the PAC reported $1.1 million and change on Schedule E. So they've characterized that much as being independent expenditures. But in the course of the audit, once you got a hold of the actual communications at issue, the view was that not all of those were really independent expenditures that need to be reported as independent expenditures, but some of them still are.
That's correct.
And that's where we are. Oh. And let me guess, they're either independent expenditures or not because of our favorite topic, express advocacy. Everyone nods. Okay. Let me ask counsel or the auditors, whoever wants to answer. What's public is the draft audit report. What is not in the audit report is a breakdown of which communications are express advocacy and which aren't. But at the end of the matter, the public will see that there was an analysis done and there's a memo that sort of lays out what is and what isn't and why. But that memo is not public sitting here today. Or is it? Because I don't see it on the blue paper on the table. I don't want to get ahead of myself and start talking. I want to make sure we all play by the same rules and I know what I can talk about.
Commissioner, the specific analysis of specific communications was contained in our response, our analysis of the interim audit report. And that has not been made public. It would not be made public until the end, under Directive 70, until the end of the process.
Okay.
The committee did not raise arguments about particular communications, but raised general arguments in response to the interim audit report that advanced the proposition that fundraising communications should never be treated as independent expenditures. And so in our analysis to the draft final audit report, we didn't repeat the communication-by-communication analysis. We addressed the arguments that had been raised by the committee. The analysis to the draft report, I think, was not attached to the ADRM.
That's
correct. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it has not yet been released.
It will be eventually.
Either, but it certainly will be eventually.
Okay. So if I talk specifically and reference it, am I in bounds or out of bounds?
I think
point?
You are in bounds if you
okay,
reference
so we're
that
not
one.
Saying this is still privileged or right. Right, this is going to go public, so we all agree this is, even though no one other than those who've seen the memo are really going to know what I'm talking about until they see the memo.
That's correct. Okay. There have been instances in which I'm pretty sure the draft analysis, the draft was attached to the ADRM and has gone out with that.
Thank you. The committee then makes a general argument that fundraising solicitations don't require independent expenditure reports. The argument, unfortunately, the way they couch it seems to turn more on subjective intent. You know, they didn't mean to influence an election. They meant to solicit money. And that doesn't really accomplish much of anything, because when it comes to independent expenditures, it's not really the subjective intent that governs. It's the content of the actual communication. But that doesn't mean that their conclusion's wrong. It just means they may have gone about it, they may have gotten there through a less, let's say, to be kind, a less preferred means. But the first question really is, do fundraising solicitations require IE reports? And I have to say, I'm not sure. On the one hand, let's assume a fundraising communication does say vote for Joe Smith for Congress. That seems to be something that would require an independent expenditure report. But what if it's a fundraising piece where there's 10 pages of issue discussion and we're talking about everything but express advocacy, and then in the tagline, usually the direct mail has like a PS after the signature, PS, rush us our contribution because we really want you to help us defeat so-and-so and defeat, so, you know, no matter what standard one applies, there's express advocacy in some part of it. It seems like an easy end around to say that you don't have to do an IE report, because then you could see a piece that really is a lot of express advocacy, but that the converse is true, where the tagline says, and by the way, call this person and tell them to cut taxes. Oh, well, this is, and give us money, right? So it's kind of a variant of that. It wouldn't be the call and cut taxes. It would be the, by the way, give us money. And I guess you could see the absurd notion, even though people already seem to feel put upon by the I was just going to say the new McCain-Feingold disclaimers, which are now about 10 years old, but the standby your ad stuff already cuts into a 30-second ad, but you could see someone, you know, wasting 3 seconds in a 30-second ad, taking the bark off the tree, and then saying, and give us money. Well, that's a solicitation. We don't have to do IE reports. So that's it, once you sort of put that straw man up and burn it down, it seems that it's very tough to say that fundraising materials that contain express advocacy are never subject to IE reporting. It's too easy to end run that, and that just doesn't seem to pass muster. The more difficult situation comes up in the converse, where there may be language that could be, if standing alone, express advocacy, but when read in the context of the larger piece. And the context I'm talking about is the actual language of the communication, not external context and all that kind of thing, but the actual context of the piece is not really express advocacy, but it's more driven to raise money, or it's a statement of fact, or it's comparing policy positions of candidates and all that. And we have a lot of that here. But the first concern, before we get to the details, is I'm hesitant to vote for an audit that declares some of this stuff is definitely independent expenditures that require independent expenditure reports, because I think the commission has never been all that clear. I think at a certain point, things simply because it's a fundraising piece doesn't exempt it out from IE reports. But there has been some play, shall we say, in the joints of the rule. On the one hand, there's MER 5809, Christian Voter Project, where the commission did find reason to believe and then conciliated and settled the matter for failure to file IE reports. And I think the issue there was, well, the respondents said they were solicitations. But then you have MER 5518, the Hawaii Democratic Party, where pieces did contain express advocacy. OGC recommended finding reason to believe not because of express advocacy, but because it was promote attack support opposed done by a state party and therefore should have been paid for with hard money as FEA, federal election activity. And the commission decided not to do RTB, no further action, but dismissed the matter. And there were a number of statements of reasons, some of which had absolutely nothing to do with the merits of whether or not IE reports were to be filed, some of which maybe could be read by analogy. And from that statement, I could see people could get somewhat confused, because at one statement of reasons said that had this invitation, meaning the one at issue in that case, been mailed more broadly than it was and in sufficient numbers to raise questions about whether it was a bona fide invitation or if it was really just a fundraising or advocacy piece masquerading as an invitation, this would be a different case, which shows that there is a distinction between, at least in that case, a fundraising piece that a few commissioners said, look, that's part of the state party convention expenses. You need to invite people and you need to let people know, so that's part of it. But it makes it sound like even if it was that, maybe if it was sent more broadly and maybe if it was, there was a question whether it's a bona fide invitation for a convention, whatever that means, or whether it was just a fundraising advocacy piece masquerading as an invitation, whatever that standard means, somehow that makes it different. Now, the facts weren't there, so it's tough, but that gives some confusion. Now, you could say, well, that's FEA, that's a different situation. But when you have a PAC like this, which is not a party committee, they don't seem to have really thought through the IE issue completely. And I say that because they reported things as IEs that folks at the FEC say are not IEs. So even FEC folks say they really didn't understand the standard. It seems like the commission needs to say one way or another. And I think it needs to be clear, and it can't be a sort of you know, what I guess I could call dicta, even though the FEC doesn't really have dicta, but to make it clear that it's not like a binding rule. But when you see language like bona fide invitation and peace masquerading, I know what they mean by that. If I were in the same position, I probably would have wrote the same statement of reason. So I'm not criticizing the use of those terms, but I think there's a second step the commission needs to do, which is to provide clarity to folks so they know that they have to file IE reports for certain solicitations. Because I think once people know, they will then think to look for that. Now, the more sophisticated players, I think, do scrub their solicitations and pull out any magic words or words that can be read as or whatever standard one wants to use, and they probably take a rather broad cut to avoid even tangling with the FEC on the issue. But for those who really haven't been in the game and do this more part-time, when you're doing the solicitations of the sort in this case, you're more worried about passing yourself off as a candidate. You're more worried about making clear that you're not really the Republican National Committee or a national party. So to the extent there's legal scrub on this, it tends to be for everything but IE reports, because as people have argued in other contexts, there's people think of IE reports as dealing with TV ads and direct mail and phones and not the fundraising part, because you need to raise money to spend the money, and the IE report is on the spending of the money, not on the raising of the money. But they don't think, what if the content of the raising of the money actually is also a form of advocacy? So I think at some point, hopefully soon, the commission can figure out how to do this. I'm hesitant to declare that these folks broke the law, because I think the law is a little fuzzy. There's been other MERS, one since I've been appointed to the commission, that have gone. I think there's one in particular went 3-3 and raised the issue then, and now here it is in an audit. And I'm not really emphasizing that MER, because I don't think it's really necessarily fair to say, gee, I caused confusion and now I think we have to fix confusion. I think that's kind of circular. So I think that at some point we have to say one way or another, because there is I think confusion out there as to what needs to be reported and what doesn't, and then once we say, then people need to file their reports. Now in this case, the second question is what really is express advocacy and what isn't. And I must confess, I have no idea. I've read the memo that tied to the interim audit about what is and what isn't, and I see where it's coming from. I'm not sure I agree that what is listed as containing express advocacy is actually express advocacy. My sense is there may be some of my colleagues who think that some of the materials that are not considered express advocacy may think are express advocacy. I think some of the materials that are characterized as containing express advocacy are perhaps the functional equivalent of express advocacy, but they're not express advocacy. What's interesting about this, if you look at the pieces and the timing, this was done early in 2008, and it's a lot about why Barack Obama and in particular Hillary Clinton are really bad news for the country. And one piece in particular looks a lot like the sort of thing that's Hillary the movie in Citizens United, which of course is not express advocacy but the functional equivalent, and that wouldn't require an IE report, but the legal memo says it comes within 100.22b, so therefore it would require an IE report. But the Supreme Court has said something different. Another piece that's characterized as express advocacy, piece 6, for example, letter 6, says, help stop Hillary Clinton. The legal memo correctly states that, but it doesn't finish the sentence. It then sort of makes it more of a policy sentence as I read it. So I'm not sure that letter 6 is express advocacy, even though it talks a lot about the election, talks a lot about candidates, talks a lot about the fact that this PAC wants to, obviously we know where the PAC wants to be on election day. But it's not the sort of express words of advocacy talked about by the Supremes in Buckley. So I'm not really sure what to do about this, because I'm hesitant to vote for a finding where I know I don't agree with some of the predicate we'll call them sub-findings of what constitutes express advocacy and what doesn't. So I throw that out to sort of stay where I am. It's not an easy one because of the number of fundraising solicitations. I have, I think, most of them here, and I'm holding it up for those listening at home. It's a pretty thick-sized piece of New York City phone book-type size chunk of solicitations, and those who know solicitations know there are always many pages with graphics and splashy PSs and signature blocks and response devices, so it's quite a thick amount of thick pack of stuff. So I'm not sure what we do, because it's an issue that has historically divided the commission. You have a committee that's characterized over $1 million of things as independent expenditures, but didn't file the individual independent expenditure reports. You have OGC and the auditors saying, well, they're actually not all independent expenditures. And then my guess is you'll have some commissioners saying, well, actually, some of them that the staff says here are not are, and then others like me say, well, the staff says they are, I don't think they are. So I'm not sure how we resolve this, but we could either talk a lot or we could figure out a short way to cut to the chase. I don't know how to do it.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I don't actually think it's that hard. I mean, the individual decisions might be hard, but what to do, I think, is actually pretty straightforward. And we, at the interim audit phase, as Commissioner McGann alluded, you know, I had identified a number of communications that the auditors had taken out of the mix that I thought ought to be in the mix. So I sent an email to my colleagues and I said, here are the letters that I think really are express advocacy and therefore do require independent expenditure reports. I completely agree with my colleague that we can't say that just because something contains a solicitation, it doesn't require an independent expenditure report, because then everybody would just tag on a solicitation to their independent expenditures and say, poof, no more reports. I agree with my colleagues, that would be crazy. So then it just comes down to a decision on each of these letters, and, you know, I read them back at the interim audit phase, and I'm sure you've read them, as to which ones contain express advocacy and which ones don't. I think some of them are pretty plain. Some of them contain phrases like, Barack Obama must not win this election, or elect John McCain for president. I mean, some of this stuff is really classic express advocacy. I am prepared to vote for the audit report today. Because although I would have included more communications, I agree that the communications that are referenced in this report are express advocacy and did require independent expenditure reports. Now, if my colleagues want to identify the ones on that list that they don't think are express advocacy, then, you know, we end up, as we frequently do, with the common denominator. There must be some of them that, unless you're saying that you don't think any of them ought to be are express advocacy and require independent expenditure reports, it seems to me that if you identified the subset that you think are express advocacy, I think we think all of them that have been identified by the auditors at this point are express advocacy, so that we would end up with the ones that you agree on. That you know, I mean, we shouldn't, I wouldn't suggest we do it here at the table, but it doesn't seem like an insurmountable task.
If I could.
Commissioner McGann.
I kind of anticipated that's what you would say, because I played it through on my mind, and I figured ultimately you come back and say, well, tell us which ones you think are express advocacy, and then I got to figure out what's express advocacy. Let me ask about two pieces in particular, because I don't know if the commission's ever really said this before, but pieces 34 and 35, the reason why they're express advocacy, I don't think is because of the content of the communication, but because the carrier envelope says John McCain for president, which is a campaign slogan, which if that were on a yard sign, that would be an IE. But if the carrier envelope says it, does that convert the whole thing inside to express advocacy? I mean, if you have a letter, multiple parts within, stapled in one part, there's law on that. But the outside of the envelope, does that to the on the reply carrier envelope? There's two different pieces. One's the mail going out the door. One's coming back. What do we do with that? Is that, and then what's the value that has to be reported as an IE if we say that there's some IE reportable event there? Do we know?
You want?
Has the commission ever said?
I don't believe the commission has ever said, but we viewed it as the whole package as part of the communication.
Mr. Herman?
Conversely, if you have a letter that says vote for John McCain, but the envelope is just a plain vanilla envelope, you wouldn't say, well, you wouldn't parse it in that way. And it seems to me that applies. Where you have a carrier envelope that says vote for John McCain, but the letter doesn't necessarily contain the statement.
I hear you, but I'm not sure it's the flip side of the same coin, because let's say you have a piece where there are, for the sake of argument, three completely separate parts within the mail piece, right? Let's say this PAC sent a piece that said whatever they said, and they sent a piece that said we're really looking to also elect state candidates, give us money for that. And there's a piece that said, you know, Repledge has this great program, we'd like you to check it out. Not to mix them up, just to, you know, keep the mood light. Does the whole entire cost of everything in the envelope then become an independent expenditure? I mean, I'm kind of thinking Emily's list in a way, where the commission tried to say if the solicitation said give us money so we can defeat so-and-so, that somehow that presumed all money received was now hard money. D.C. Circuit said that's not the case. I see that as, and this is not, that's not logical thinking, it's associational thinking. You know, I'm not saying it's the same thing. But to me, I'm not sure the commission's ever said as a matter of law, the carrier envelope determines everything that's in the content. And so it's not so easy to say, well, you know, it's up to this side of the aisle to determine whether or not, not that we have an aisle, but this side of the dais to determine what's express advocacy. Because, again, I don't think the commission's ever said what to do.
I think that's certainly the case. The commission has not rendered an opinion on this particular issue. I think that's true.
Okay. So the question then is, do we in an audit announce for the first time that's now the new rule, or do we sort of say it's the new rule but then do a statement of reasons that then, you know, in 2 years somebody else says, well, you know, that wasn't clear? Or do we try to figure out a way to make this clear going forward and not necessarily ding this committee for something that the commission's never really said is a problem on these two pieces? I don't know the answer to that.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that the challenge that you're identifying is that committees are incredibly creative about how they go about all of their work, and I don't think we could possibly have a rule for every kind of communication that someone is going to think of and be creative about, and I don't think we should. I think the question is there express advocacy? And I open this envelope, and inside I have a couple of pieces of paper, one of which says John McCain for president. Seems to me it's part and parcel of the same thing.
Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also think the converse would be completely unworkable. I mean, are we going to tell people that when they file their IE reports, they should weigh the different pieces of paper or count the lines or do some kind of weird allocation of what they which lines they think contain express advocacy and report the value of that? I mean, they all have to carry a stamp or a permit, whatever kind of mailing. I just think that would be incredibly complex and would be quite cumbersome for committees to have to work with.
But there's been a time-space allocation rule for 35 years, and that's been workable. I mean, people can split costs. Half the piece is, there's two separate pieces, and I'm saying there's like staples, and there's no question there's separate pieces in the envelope. Let's make it there's two pieces. So maybe half is the IE, half is not the IE. People do IEs where they talk part about a federal candidate and part about a state candidate. They have to split the cost. The whole value is not the IE. It's done on time space. The commission's been doing that for years. It's not unworkable. It's worked just fine. And remember, before one of the Shays cases made the FEC change the rule on the, I think it was the 20% rule. But there was a practice that was developed where, in order to do door-to-door and hand out literature, some state parties, and I learned this after the fact because I didn't come up with this one, but the person who did was it got really the gold star for creativity, where they would take basically five pieces to hand out. Four were rumpled up photocopies of state candidate stuff, and the fifth was a bright, glossy federal candidate piece. And they'd hand it out. They'd say, well, one-fifth of what we're doing is federal, so therefore we don't have to pay for the handing out with hard money. True story. You're shaking your head, but that's what somebody... So actually, the idea of splitting up things was even alive and well post-McCain-Feingold. Didn't make it right, you know, kind of... You know, that if the court would have known about that one, they probably would have gotten that Shays opinion done even quicker. But it raises the point that you can split this stuff out. And when I hear having a rule is unworkable when it's tied to a reporting regime. How do you have a reporting regime that doesn't have sort of clear standards ahead of time? Unless, well, we do it this way, where after the fact we say, guess what, you should have done your report.
Madam Vice Chair.
I think it is clear. It contains express advocacy. It requires an IE report. So I think the only question is, you know, you say you don't know how to proceed. I could make the motion. It's your call whether you want to vote that none of them required IE reports or some of them required IE reports. If you need more time to identify which ones you think required the IE reports, I guess we can hold it over. I had asked the chair to put this on the agenda because it's been sitting around for a while, and I thought, you know, we ought to just reach a conclusion on it. It's an old one. It's this. We're talking about, you know, the election between John McCain and Barack Obama. We really ought to finish this audit.
Commissioner McGann.
Unencumbered by where my colleagues are on this, if you make the motion, I assume the motion would be to adopt the audit report as written.
That would be my motion.
And we play this out, and let's say that goes hypothetically 3-3, and then this issue would move to the other issues, and then we move it along that way, right?
Should we break down the motion finding by finding?
No, I'm not suggesting. I'm just making sure that we all understand, and counsel's nodding. Yeah, that sounds like what would happen. I'm just procedurally making sure. Maybe ask the chair, and if the chair wants to ask counsel if they agree with that, that's fine.
Counsel?
Yes, we agree.
Okay.
Is it all going to other issues or just finding two?
Yeah, the problem is part of the misstatement is tied to finding two, right? Can I ask the auditors that? Or it's not. It seems like the misstatement is just a typical misstatement. You didn't lump in the IE issue into the misstatement finding.
No, I don't believe we did.
No.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Herman.
Could we consider a procedural issue moment among ourselves briefly,
sure.
Please?
Sure.
Thank you.
You know what, I think the best thing to do is, because we've told Professor Zolt that we were going to call him back at 11:30 Eastern, which is in 5 minutes, and I haven't had a chance to read draft C, I think we should take a recess, reconvene at 11:30, call Professor Zolt, do that advisory opinion, and then come back to this and the other matters on the agenda. I need to read this draft before we get him on the phone. Thank you. With respect to the last matter on the agenda, which is the Legacy Committee Political Action Committee audit, we're going to hold that over to the next open meeting. The discussion made us think of a couple of questions that we were trying to get the answers from the auditors, and it's probably best to just work on the list and reconsider at the next open meeting. Mr. Herman?
Just to correct my earlier statement, there's actually a Directive 70, that speaks to the issue of whether to vote on individual findings, and under Directive 70, the Commission is required to make a finding by finding vote if there are not four commissioners voting in favor of both findings.
Okay, thank you very much. That's helpful. Excellent.